think that the music in hell for eternity would be some of this rock music with all its vulgarities, with all of its sexual innuendos. And here they were stripping themselves, and the fella running around in a little G-string. It reminds me of the wild man of Gadara in Mark chapter 5, who was possessed of a demon running around in the graveyard naked.
Welcome to the Satanic Panic Survivor Podcast. My name is Christopher Irizarry, and I'll be your tour guide on our journey back to the 1980s Satanic Panic. I'm a Gen Xer, and I experienced the 1980s Satanic Panic firsthand when my adopted mother became a born-again Christian, and because of that, I was raised for most of my childhood and adolescence in conservative Christian evangelicalism. On our journey together, we're not just going to be revisiting the 1980s Satanic Panic, we're going to be visiting parts of America where there is a new Satanic Panic brewing, sort of like the Empire Strikes Back, only with Lucifer and other delusions. This new Satanic Panic is mainly rising up around fears that the LGBTQ community is after your kids.
But she said, my little boy was in the back seat of the car, and a radio preacher came on and said, our Lord God, the master of the universe. And her boy jumped from the back seat of the car and said, Mommy, God isn't master of the universe. He-Man is.
The Satanic Panic Survivor Podcast was entirely produced by me, Christopher Irizarry Oakley. Some help from my cat, Halsey, and my service dog, Megan Markle. The music in this podcast was also entirely written and produced by me. I released music under the name Vampires Under the Sharks at the Brighton Aquarium. And now back to the 80s Satanic Panic.
We take our authority over this election. Jesus is Lord. Over the midterm election.
This president is not suffering dementia. He is possessed with the devil.
Target decided it would be a great idea to partner with a company that, as far as I can tell, it's one of its main lines seems to be some sort of pro-Satan line of clothing.
Guys, you can't make this stuff up. Target hired a Satanist to design clothing for the new Pride line. Yikes.
They're giving it to your kids. If that doesn't give you a reason to boycott Target, I don't know what does.
Hey, do you guys support the Satanic Pride propaganda?
Camouflage occult movie, including levitation, psychic healing, mind control, mental telepathy, that type of thing. E.T. also included some inferences to homosexuality within the movie.
Homosexuality?
Yes. And Yoda's called the Zen master. He's always seen with serpents around him or serpents around his
neck.
Yeah,
look at the serpents around his neck there.
He is a three-fingered, three-toed beast. So he has the two fingers and the thumb, which from my information means Satan is Lord.
Those were clips from the OG Satanic Panic and from what I am going to call on the Satanic Panic Survivor Podcast, Satanic Panic 2.0. The Satanic Panic 2.0 is something that is being revived by conservative Christian evangelicals and also people in the Republican Party like Marjorie Taylor Greene. And they are trying to revive one of the central ideas of the 1980s Satanic Panic, and that is the idea that Satan is influencing people in the Democratic Party. In the intro for the Satanic Panic Survivor Podcast, you heard a preacher saying that Joe Biden is possessed. I really don't understand why these people are not in an inpatient facility. But then again, the entire United States has sort of become an open-air inpatient facility. And in the United States becoming an open-air inpatient facility, we have people who believe that the Democratic Party is trying to turn the United States into a country that worships Satan. They believe that Hollywood is trying to turn the United States into a country that worships Satan or receives the mark of the beast. All of these things go back to something called Christian millennialism. And this is a constant belief that we are in the end times. And as someone who was raised for a good part of his life in conservative Christian evangelicalism, these people have believed that we have been in the end times since about 1979. So take it with a grain of salt. Anyway, I decided to launch the Satanic Panic Survivor podcast, not only because as a journalist, I used to write about trends, mostly trends in fashion and trends in the art world. I wanted to do this podcast because I've lived through the 1980s Satanic Panic. And in the conservative Christian evangelical schools I was sent to after my adopted mother became a born-again Christian, the now debunked cases of satanic cults operating preschools as a way to get access to children to use in satanic rituals, those cases like the McMartin preschool case and other cases in Canada and children's homes in the United Kingdom being accused, and children's homes in the United Kingdom are basically like foster homes where foster children live. People who ran those homes in the 1980s were accused of being parts of satanic cults. Now, in the Christian evangelical schools I was sent to, these schools and the churches attached to these schools, they were very explicit about the agenda of the moral majority at the time. And the moral majority, which was basically run by Jerry Falwell, the moral majority used the Satanic Panic as a recruitment mechanism. And with the cases of alleged satanic ritual abuse, or SRA, in these preschools, the moral majority used these cases, which have all been debunked now, to tell a cautionary tale of what happened when mothers didn't stay at home with children and they started to build public support for funding of daycare programs like Head Start. And they also used this to turn people against public schooling and sell the idea of the government funding Christian schools. This was the beginning of the voucher movement or the school choice movement. And back at the in the day, in the Christian schools I went to, people said openly that public schools turn children away from God and turn children towards Satan. And their main rationale for backing that bit of crazy up was that public schools were teaching evolution. I did not pay much attention to this because I had gone to public schools before I was put in Christian evangelical schools. And so I was quite young when I was, you know, taken out of public schools and put into Christian evangelical schools. But I had basically learned the basics of evolution. And to this, what was really interesting when I went to the University of Wisconsin, this is a tangential story to kind of explain how Christian
evangelicals view evolution, or view evolutionary theory. I took a class on Charles Darwin and the history of evolutionary theory. And I came home, this is my freshman year, I came home at Christmas time. And before that class started in the spring, we had to read Darwin's Origin of Species. And my adopted father, who was a Democrat, I need to make something really clear. There are a lot of Democrats, especially in the Midwest, who hold conservative Christian evangelical beliefs, and that's how the Republican Party can get votes from these Democrats. But my adopted father, who considered himself to be a Democrat, he told me that dinosaur bones and other fossils were put in the ground by Satan to trick Christians into not believing in the Bible. So that's how the moral majority sold the idea that public schools were bringing children towards worshiping Satan. It's such a crazy belief that it's hard for me to explain these. It's hard to explain the world that I grew up in, but we're going to try to do that on this podcast to illuminate how the 1980s Satanic Panic affected American society, and to also illuminate how and why the right wing is trying to bring back the Satanic Panic as a new narrative to get people to vote Republican in 2024. Because under the Trump administration, we started to get closer to what these Christian evangelicals really want. And what they really want, along with many people in the Republican Party, is to turn the United States into a theocracy. And one of their arguments for turning the United States into a theocracy is because they have to stop the grip of Satan on the United States. And according to these Christian evangelicals, Satan is trying to turn America away from being a Christian country. I hope you caught all that. So I wanted to present a timeline of all the events that happened during the Satanic Panic, from the start of the Satanic Panic in 1980, the Satanic Panic started with the release of a book called Michelle Remembers, and that was written by a now debunked psychiatrist named Dr. Lawrence Pastor from British Columbia, and he wrote this book with his patient Michelle Smith. Michelle Smith had allegedly been abused as a child by a satanic cult in Victoria, British Columbia. And according to the sell of the book and many interviews with Dr. Lawrence Pastor, Dr. Lawrence Pastor had unearthed these memories of Michelle being used in satanic ritual abuse, or SRA. Dr. Lawrence Pastor had unearthed these memories that were repressed deep in Michelle's subconscious. But there were many, many other events that augmented very widespread public belief in the idea that there was a gigantic worldwide satanic underground, that there was a worldwide satanic panic underground operating all over the world, and they were using preschools as a front. They were also active in the entertainment industry, particularly the music industry. And they were out to get all of us, but they were particularly out to get children and use children in satanic ritual abuse, or even human sacrifice. And you may recognize that false belief as being the underpinnings of the QAnon conspiracy. And as a matter of fact, a lot of the 1980s satanic panic has been used to manufacture the QAnon conspiracy. So that's why I'm sort of calling our time in the revival of the satanic panic as, I'm referring to it as, Satanic Panic 2.0. Now, back in the 1980s, the main vehicle for selling Satanism to teenagers, according to Christian evangelical preachers and even the mainstream media, was heavy metal music. So let's listen briefly to a preacher from that time, a televangelist, talking about how heavy metal music was satanic. Well, just listen, and then I'll make some comments on what the preacher is saying.
They show the same programs, the rock concerts, on television, and it's just like all hell was let loose. In fact, you may not like what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say it anyway because I'm not afraid to speak out. I think that the music in hell for eternity be some of this rock music with all its vulgarities and all of its sexual innuendos. And here they were stripping themselves, and the fella running around in a little G-string. It reminds me of the wild man of Gadara in Mark chapter 5 who was possessed of a demon running around in the graveyard naked and cutting himself with stones and screaming, demon possession. Psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your heart to the Lord. You get a dose of the Holy Ghost filling you, controlling you, and you'll be singing a new song and get rid of all of those stinking rock records.
One of the things that you will notice as I play clips of these 1980s televangelists is that their imagery is always really homoerotic. This preacher is talking about how, I forget what the name of this preacher was. It's not, he was not Jerry Falwell, but the imagery he uses is a naked man running around in the graveyard. Oh, I'm sorry, the man was not naked. He was wearing a G-string. That's even more homoerotic than a naked man. But you're going to notice that a lot of these 1980s preachers who are using the satanic panic as a recruitment mechanism, they use a lot of homoerotic imagery. Anyway, so this is another clip from a VHS tape / DVD about the evils of heavy metal music.
Outside intelligent forces with supernatural power are occasionally able to play an artist much like we would play a musical instrument.
So it's important to understand that the belief that heavy metal music or rock music in general was satanic, this was not using, people didn't say it was satanic because of the debauchery, the infamous debauchery of heavy metal bands like Motley Crue. There was a belief that demons or Satan himself was actually, these demons or Satan himself were actually inside the music influencing teenagers. And there was also any number of criminal cases where teenagers did teenager stuff, or sometimes they did really horrible things like murder somebody. But there were any number of criminal cases that tied criminal behavior to the person who committed the crime being involved in a satanic cult. And it's absolutely mind-boggling how many criminal cases were investigated as being tied to the satanic underground in the 1980s. But we'll get into that a little bit later. Or rather, I'll talk about those criminal cases in another episode of the Satanic Panic Survivor podcast. It's also important to understand that the belief in a giant underground, a giant satanic underground. That belief was not relegated to Christian evangelical communities. This was being sold by the mainstream media, by the news media, but especially, it was especially sold by talk shows. And this is a clip of Oprah Winfrey introducing a woman who was allegedly a victim of satanic ritual abuse. Oprah Winfrey.
My next guest was used also in worshiping the devil, participated in human sacrifice rituals and cannibalism. She says her family has been involved in rituals for generations.
Now, Oprah Winfrey actually got in trouble with many Jewish groups for airing this episode because the woman who alleged that she was used in satanic ritual abuse as a child actually perpetuated a very old anti-Semitic trope narrative that is called generally the blood libel myth. And this is a myth that Jewish people don't actually worship God. They don't actually practice Judaism. This myth says that Judaism is a front for Jewish people worshiping Satan.
You come from generations of ritualistic abuse?
Yes. My family has an extensive family tree, and they keep track of who's been involved and who hasn't been involved. And it's gone back to, like, 1700.
And so you were...
Right. Maybe. I was born into a family that believes in this.
Now, this belief, the blood libel myth, really gripped Europe, particularly Poland and Russia, in the 17th century, and this led to many pogroms. If you don't know what a pogrom is, that's when people would believe that Jewish people were doing things like stealing babies to use in SRA rituals, and they and mobs of people would go into Jewish villages, burn the village, and also murder Jewish people. In fact, the Holocaust before the 1950s, it was called the Great Pogrom. I'm sorry, sometimes I mispronounce words for reasons I'm not going to get into in this episode. But here's more of this con artist on Oprah Winfrey selling the idea that she was used in satanic ritual abuse as a child. And Oprah is treating this person like they are a credible human being.
And so when you were brought up in this kind of evilness, did you just think it was normal?
I've blocked out a lot of the memories I had because of my multiple personality disorder. But yes, I mean, it's like if you grow up with something, you think it's normal.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought...
So what kinds of things? You don't have to give us the gory details, but what kinds of things went on in the family?
Well, there would be rituals in which babies would be sacrificed and you would have to, you know...
Who's babies?
There were people who bred babies in our family. No one would know about it. A lot of people were overweight, so you couldn't tell if they were pregnant or not.
Well, I don't think the body positivity movement is going to adopt that rationale for people being overweight. And now here we get directly into the anti-Semitism, where the woman being interviewed, I forget her name, and she actually published a best-selling book, but here we get into the Jewish part of the whole thing.
And this is does everyone else think it's a nice Jewish family? From the outside, you appear to be a nice Jewish girl.
Definitely.
And you all are worshiping the devil inside the home?
Right. There's other Jewish families across the country. It's not just my own family.
Really?
There you go. And with that clip, you can also hear very overtly the anti-Semitism that was usually beneath the surface of the satanic panic. A Canadian broadcasting CBC producer did named Lisa Bryn Rundle did a really excellent documentary and podcast about the Satanic Panic. The focus of that podcast, though, are Satanic Panic incidents in Canada, whereas on the Satanic Panic Survivor podcast, I'm going to be interspersing my own personal experience with Satanic Panic stuff that's from the United States. Here's a snippet of Lisa Bryn Rundle talking about the Satanic Panic in Canada.
Underground networks of Satanists were infiltrating daycares and preschools to physically and sexually abuse children in occult rituals. Much of what fueled the panic was not real. These claims led to a wave of high-profile criminal trials in the U.S., Canada, and beyond.
There's a widely held opinion that what happened at the daycare was the devil's handiwork.
In future episodes of the Satanic Panic Survivor, I will do a deep dive into some of the cases around preschools in the United States and Canada, where people who ran the preschool and people who worked at the preschool were accused of using the children at the preschool in satanic ritual abuse. Now, this whole idea of satanic ritual abuse is being revived again today. It's mainly being revived through a Christian evangelical woman named Mary Knight. And here is Mary Knight on YouTuber Anthony Padilla's show.
Can you get into the things that you witnessed as a child?
Child trafficking. My parents were my They tutored me. They took child of me. And they also, some of the abuse would be considered by some people satanic ritual abuse. Being placed in a coffin with a corpse.
It wasn't just any corpse.
It was my sister.
It was my sister. You know, this is some pretty sick stuff, but it's hard to not laugh at the absurdity of the whole thing. And the little glitches were glitches that were put in by Anthony Padilla or his production team so that the interview with Mary Knight would pass YouTube's community standards. Now, what is interesting about Mary Knight selling her story is almost identical to the story of Michelle Smith. Michelle Smith was the woman who wrote Michelle Remembers with now debunked psychiatrist Dr. Lawrence Pazder. And I want to play a clip from a British Columbia news program. This is a clip that I got from the Royal Museum in British Columbia, and it is an interview with Dr. Lawrence Pazder and Michelle Smith that came out the same month that Michelle Remembers was released. And if you decide to do your own research, I don't like to say do your own research because that's a really QAnon thing to say, but if you decide to find some of the sources that I'm talking about in the Satanic Panic Survivor podcast and you Google Mary Knight and listen to Mary Knight retelling her story mostly in Christian evangelical forums, you will notice that it's almost identical to the story of Michelle Smith and the narrative of Michelle Remembers. So here is part of the interview from the British Columbia news program way back in 1980.
The book is called Michelle Remembers. The authors are Michelle Smith and Lawrence Pazder, MD, who, acting as a psychiatrist, distracted from her bizarre childhood memories of Satan, which have shocked many people, and asking him, how come you wrote this book? Tell me about Michelle and what, in fact, you believe happened to her as a small child.
Well, I have to back up a little bit. I knew Michelle very well through 4 years of therapy, intensive therapy, and there was no evidence of any of this kind of material present, but I knew her personality and everything. When to feel and to tell me in detail these events for 14 months of what happened to her as a child, it was very difficult for me to decide where it was coming from. I'd look to see, was it imagination? Was it hysteria? Where was it coming from? Was it psychosis? I have to say that the evidence is clear that this came from an experience that Michelle had. There has been nothing that I've been able to unearth that says it didn't.
This was not done under hypnosis?
Not under hypnosis.
Michelle, can I ask you what it was that after 4 years of therapy and this deep state of consciousness that came out of your mind?
Basically, what I remembered was a 14-month period of my life at age 5, where I was given to a group of people whom at first I wasn't aware of what they were doing, other than to a child. They were adults doing things I couldn't understand and that frightened me. About 3 and a half months into the remembering, I realized through the ritual and repetition that these people had that they were involved in some type of satanic church or worship.
You were then how old?
5 years old.
Let me just comment on what Michelle Smith said in regards to not understanding what the adults were doing. And of course, we know now that Michelle Smith was never used in satanic ritual abuse. But if she was, I know that by the time I was 5 years old, I had seen Satanism portrayed in a horror movie that was on television late at night. And I was not allowed to watch those kind of movies in my home, in the home I was adopted into. In fact, we didn't even have a television. But I know when I stayed overnight at friends' homes, friends who were raised in a more secular manner, we often watched movies, mostly Hammer films, that depicted Satanism. These movies used to come on around 2 in the morning before there was cable television. That's why I always hated cable television, because cable television obliterated late night horror movies and Saturday kung fu films. But I digress. The satanic panic is mostly remembered by people who are interested in what I will call hipster kitsch. And a lot of things that the satanic panic is remembered for is the obsession with children's toys or children's cartoons being a vehicle for Satan. And this is, of course, being revived again with the Barbie movie and so-called woke Disney films. And in future episodes of the Satanic Panic Survivor podcast, I'll get into the current false beliefs around toys and other inanimate objects being possessed by demons and other weird ideas. But here is a clip of two grown Christian evangelical men talking about the occult being a big part of the cartoon He-Man. Again, lots of homoerotic commentary that the two evangelical men do not realize is homoerotic, or maybe they do.
Well, we've seen over the last several years a slow, subtle occultic influence in our cartoons, but it's become so blatant. When do you feel this blatant turn towards the occult and witchcraft really took on its momentum?
Well, there's a cartoon called He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. Now, He-Man and the Masters of the Universe really broke the ground on this cartoon occultism.
Well, I think what we should do is let's watch on the screen right now and see an opening to a He-Man series and see some of the occultic overtones as we begin this. We're going to play a little segment here showing the transformation of He-Man.
Power of Grayskull!
Well, now, Phil, here we're seeing a transformation of He-Man from a wimp, like a Clark Kent type of character, to the He-Man, and he says something like the power by the power of Grayskull. Is that correct?
Yes. What you just seen is He-Man being transformed. In fact, his name is Adam.
Yeah.
First man.
Interesting.
Until he's transformed, and then he becomes He-Man, the most powerful man in the universe, by lifting his sword in the air and yelling, "By the power of Grayskull." Now, to understand this, we have to understand what Grayskull is. It is a castle built by unknown hands in the shape of the skull, and there's a demon spirit living within it that manifests in the shape of a skull. And so our good character is empowered by occultic demon spirits.
You're kidding me.
You're kidding me. That is a clip from a series of VHS tapes that was released by a church, in Orange County, California, called The Eagle's Nest, and that VHS series was called Turmoil in the Toy Box. We're going to be hearing a lot of clips from Turmoil in the Toy Box on the Satanic Panic Survivor podcast. So now I want to present a timeline of how the Satanic Panic unfolded and then how it faded away. This is a timeline of events between 1980, when Michelle Remember was released, and 1985, which was in the middle of the Clinton administration, which was a time when America started to really fall away from the church, and Christian evangelicalism lost a lot of power in the United States. Now, I want to say that I am also a survivor of childhood sexual abuse. It did not, was not, it didn't happen with a satanic ritual. I was actually sexually abused by a member of the church I belong to, or rather the rubric of churches that we went to when I was a small child. All these churches were tied to the Christian Reformed Church. Actually, this person was a member of Hope Christian Reformed Church in Palos Heights, and he volunteered for a church-based babysitting service that was free for working mothers or newly divorced mothers. And I am going to opine that the reason many people began to fall away from Christian evangelical churches in the 1990s, and this would be Gen X people falling away from the church, is because there was a rash of childhood sexual abuse in evangelical churches. The most publicized incidents of childhood sexual abuse in evangelical churches was the rash of abuse in Southern Baptist churches, or rather churches in the Southern Baptist Conference. But there was also a rash of childhood sexual abuse in the Christian Reformed churches, mostly in the southern suburbs of Chicago, in the 80s and the 90s. And in later episodes of the Satanic Panic Survival Podcast, I will talk about the rash of abuse that was covered up in Protestant churches. But I think sexual abuse being covered up and people experiencing childhood sexual abuse in these churches is one of the big reasons that people fell away from the church in the 1990s. And as people turned away from the church and American culture became more secular. Let me also add, I think the 1990s were the era when computers really started to come into the workplace. So our society was also entering a more scientific age. And in the 1980s, the moral majority and Christian evangelicals really clashed with science. So as people were using the gifts that science gave us in the workplace, the clash with science in Christian evangelicalism seemed rather Luddite. Anyway, I am going to present a timeline of events that happened between 1980, the beginning of the Satanic Panic, and 1995, when the Satanic Panic started to wane. So this beginning of the Satanic Panic was the release of the book Michelle Remembers. Now, the vehicle on television which really helped the Satanic Panic spread and legitimized the belief that Satan was behind ritual abuse, a rash of crimes, and heavy metal music was a special that Geraldo Rivera produced called Devil Worship, Exposing Satan's Underground. And here is a clip from that Geraldo Rivera special.
Devil Worship, Exposing Satan's Underground.
Whether a Satan exists is a matter of belief, but we are certain that Satanism exists. To some, it's a religion. To others, it's the practice of evil in the devil's name. It exists, and it's flourishing. Members of our studio audience tonight will attest to that. They are friends and foes of Satanism, devil worshipers and law enforcers, experts and victims. They'll help us understand this force that exalts evil and darkness. We'll be asking why. Why does it exist? And why does it appeal to so many vulnerable people, especially the young? Now, the very young and the impressionable should definitely not be watching this program tonight. This is not a Halloween fable.
The next big event in the history of the Satanic Panic occurred in 1984, and this was the McMartin preschool trial. This was the most widely publicized case of children alleging that they were lured or forced into satanic rituals at a preschool. And as I said before, in the world of Christian conservative evangelicals, the McMartin preschool case was used to warn mothers about working, recommended they stay at home and take care of their children because there were evil Satanists out there waiting to prey on their children. And this was also used by Republicans to argue for the funding that was provided to preschool programs for low-income families, Head Start. Then in 1986, another book that had a false testimony by someone who said that they were involved in Satanism was released. This book was by Mike Warnke, and it was called The Satan Seller. And Mike Warnke alleged that he was a priest in Anton LaVey's, or rather a high priest, in Anton LaVey's Church of Satan. The next year, in 1987, a book called Satanic Ritual Abuse, Principles of Treatment, this is an actual book for psychologists, was released, and the author of that book was Colin A. Ross. And this book dealt very heavily with the now debunked notion of repressed memories. Then in 1989, the wrongful conviction, the trial of the West Memphis Three started. And the West Memphis Three were goth teenagers in the town of Memphis, Arkansas, who were wrongly accused of murdering children. And then there was a very short-lived panic around goth culture, and people began to believe that goth culture was a front for Satanism, or goths were involved in Satanism. And if you remember your punk rock history, goth was first called death rock. Then in 1990, the book that was published that is largely considered to be the blueprint of contemporary QAnon related satanic underground conspiracies, The Ultimate Evil by Maury Terry, was released. And in this book, which centers around the murders committed by David Berkowitz in New York, Terry connects, loud truck passing. In the book, The Ultimate Evil, Terry connects a series of murders, the Son of Sam, I believe the Zodiac Killer, and many other murders to a underground satanic network, which leads back to the Process Church. And Charles Manson was once an ancillary member of the Process Church, and the Process Church was actually an offshoot of Scientology. Now, as I said before, we're entering the 1990s when the satanic panic starts to die down, and the two things that sort of end the satanic panic is in 1995, the FBI published a report titled The Investigator's Guide to Allegations of Ritual Child Abuse. And this report stated there was no evidence of a nationwide satanic network using children in satanic ritual abuse. And then by this time, a year later in 1996, the British government published a similar report titled Children's Homes and Satanic Abuse, finding that there was, surprise, no satanic ritual abuse at children's homes, which, as best as I can describe it and described it before, are the UK equivalent of group foster homes. I should also add to this, in 1990, 12 children in Rochdale, a town in Greater Manchester, were taken from their homes because their parents were accused of satanic ritual abuse. As adults, those children sued the British government. And that's a timeline which also serves as an outline of the period that we are going to cover in the Satanic Panic Survivor podcast and the major events that I am going to talk about in this series. And in the next episode, we are going to talk very specifically about Michelle Remembers. And then in the third episode, we're going to talk about Satan and heavy metal music. And then in episode 4, I'm going to talk very specifically about my own personal childhood experiences with living through the 1980s Satanic Panic. And then because I'm mixed race, in episode 5, I'm going to do a deeper dive into the racism that drove the Satanic Panic. The Satanic Panic was largely a way for the moral majority, Christian evangelicals, and the Republican Party to package fears around racial integration that were still alive by 1980. Remember that some of the first schools to be racially integrated in the northern United States, that didn't happen until 1968, so there were still a lot of myths about racial integration that were around in 1980 when Ronald Reagan got elected. And throughout various Satanic Panic Survivor episodes, I'm going to be playing clips from a preacher named Jeff Godwin. He wasn't really an official preacher. He was one of those guys who had a story about how he got saved. Jeff Godwin was evidently in a heavy metal band, and then his wife's family brought him to Christianity. There's a lot of stories like that woven throughout the Satanic Panic. Hold on, the cat is playing with a plastic bag. The familiar spirit in this home wants to be known, have her presence known on the Satanic Panic Survivor podcast. But Jeff Goodwin explicitly talked about how rock and roll, the beats in rock and roll, come from voodoo, which is a racist framing of cultural and religious practices in Africa. These cultural and religious practices were brought to the Americas by slaves through the Middle Passage. But Jeff Godwin, sold the idea that rock and roll music was a vehicle for the devil. And then growing up in Christian evangelicalism, lots of preachers and Republican elected officials like Henry Hyde would come to Christian schools and talk about how racial integration was bringing Satan into mainstream society, because basically the reason that black people sold drugs and all that kind of stuff was because they were agents of Satan and also worship Satan. It's a lot of nonsense, and we're going to be talking about a lot of that nonsense. Now, if you've ever watched my TikTok space, I'm the Satanic Panic Survivor on TikTok, you will notice I do a lot of Swifty content. And also, when I get around to it, I'm going to be starting a Patreon. And on Patreon, since the purpose of this podcast in the long term is to not just talk about the Satanic Panic, but other moral panics and bubbles and manias, I am going to be doing a series of episodes for subscribers only on Swifties and the cultural impact of Taylor Swift. So we're going to be covering a lot of ground in the long term, but right now we're going to stay within the confines of the 1980 Satanic Panic, and eventually we're going to get to the current Satanic Panic that is being used to drive people to voting Republican in 2024. We'll see if it works. It's also being used to create prejudice against LGBTQ people. So that is it for the first episode of the Satanic Panic Survivor podcast. I apologize for some of the weird sound. I'm fiddling with the de-esser because I live in Arizona right now and I have to use air conditioning. But I am going to be moving. I'm not going to say where I'm moving because I am in HUD housing under domestic violence protection. But I am moving because I have been threatened regularly with police unaliving me. That's how I say killing now, because I do a lot of TikToks and you have to say unalived on TikTok. But basically, I also moved to Arizona to not be a witness in a police brutality case. It was a civil case with a Chicago police officer named Joseph Fugoli at the center of the case. Joseph Fugoli had tortured myself and friends of mine who went to Howard University when I was a student at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And since then, I don't know when I'm going to go into the story about this police brutality. Probably when I do a subscriber-only podcast about the manias around Black Lives Matter. I will tell you, as a police brutality victim, survivor, not my favorite organization. I respect a lot of the things they did. They brought an important conversation to the top of the cultural heap. But I have a lot of criticism about their avoidance of various cases. And one of the cases they avoided getting involved in was the Code of Silence case, where I was called as a witness. And this has led to someone making threats at my door to have the police called on me. I live in a smaller area of Tucson called South Tucson. And as of 2 weeks ago, the entire South Tucson police force came to my door and mocked my disability. So this has been very troubling for me. So I'm planning to move back to an area of the country where I know more people. And also, I want to be closer to the area where I used to work. My last job before I became disabled because of multiple sclerosis was as a contractor at Booz Allen Hamilton, which is a company a lot of people would relate to Satan, probably if they're on the left wing. But I'm going to move back to a different part of the country so I can be on an Amtrak train line to get contract work again in the security cleared sector. And yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff that's been going on in Arizona, including the torturous heat, which no one in Arizona seems to equate with climate change. But also, my main job was as an app developer. I'm going to be going back to graduate school for computer science. to basically do a dissertation on how software can better serve people who are on safety net programs. And this will be a proposal for software that better integrates programs and helps people maximize their life through these safety net programs. But the main reason I'm moving is I don't exactly like the threats to be unalive by police as a police brutality survivor. Now, I'm sure a lot of people will get that. So I'm putting up this first episode without the greatest production because I've been promising people on TikTok that I was going to turn my TikToks about the 1980 Satanic Panic into a podcast. And so I'm just getting this first episode up. And I will stop talking now. And I hope to see you in the second episode where we're going to focus on the release of Michelle Remembers in 1980. I should also make a really important correction to something that I said twice in the podcast, that Republicans used the McMartin preschool case and other cases where children made up things for whatever reason that they were used in SRA, satanic ritual abuse. I misspoke and said that Republicans used these cases to argue for funding Head Start. Republicans used these cases to use these cases as an argument for defunding Head Start programs and to deter mothers from going into the workplace and, you know, handing off the care of their kids to preschools or daycare centers. But we will get into that a lot more when I do the episode about these cases. So long, farewell, as the children said in The Sound of Music, and I will see you 2 weeks from now in the second episode of the Satanic Panic Survivor podcast. This podcast is going to be bi-weekly because I have a lot of other things to do to rebuild my life. By the way, my disability is multiple sclerosis, and my adopted mother thinks that I am unable to walk and that I'm in a wheelchair because I am not a Christian, and Satan has taken over my body. So this subject is near and dear to my heart, and I know way too much about it. So see y'all in 2 weeks.